Tony Brown is a record producer who grew up in the Triad, a little place called Walkertown, to be exact. His dad was a strict evangelist, and their lives revolved mostly around the church and gospel music. And so what started as a little boy playing piano with his family band evolved into a career that landed him a gig playing for Elvis Presley, and he also became a record producer who turned out 37 number one singles for country superstar George Strait. Producer Tony Brown shares his memories in a coffee table book called Elvis, Straight to Jesus, An Iconic Producer's Journey with Legends of Rock and Roll, Country, and Gospel Music. Tony Brown, welcome to The State of Things.
Good to be here. Good to be in connection with North Carolina again.
Yeah, all connected here where it all began with your evangelist father and his insistence that if there were going to be music played around this house, it would be gospel, I'm guessing.
That's right. When I first got into the record business, people would interview me and say, "What's the first record you ever bought?" And I think they thought I was going to say the Beatles. But I would say George Beverly, Shea, How Great Thou Art. That's the only kind of music I can listen
to. That's all you listen to. You forged a relationship with gospel singers J.D. and Donnie Sumner, right? That became part
right.
of the Stanford
Quartet. That was my first professional job, and that was my dream. My dream was to play with J.D. Sumner. He was the most iconic Southern gospel bass singer in the business at the time.
How did you make that connection?
Well, you know... You call my family a band. I think we were called a group back in those days. Mm. And so we played all around churches, and we would sing on TV shows. And so I was 13 when I started playing, but I looked like I was about 9. And so I learned to play one song with my family. My dad played the piano most of the time. And the response to me playing was so amazing that I thought, I need to learn 2 songs. So I kind of got the showbiz bite right then.
Right. And this is playing.
And it kind of spread. You know, the reason I got the job with Elvis was because I played with J.D. Sumner. And Elvis really wanted to be in a gospel group with J.D., and it never panned out. So that's the reason the connection to Elvis was through J.D. Sumner.
This is great. This is the Elvis' lifelong dream is to be in a gospel group, right?
Oh, yeah. And yet he never quite made it, you know?
Yeah.
And so when you would see him play in concert, when he would do How Great Thou Art or any gospel song, it wasn't just a show filler. That was where his heart really was. In fact, his version of How Great Thou Art, I think, is maybe one of the best there's ever been.
Well, so you end up being the house band for Elvis, and I mean literally the house band. Tell us about this gig.
I was with J.D., and then I left J.D. Sumner after about 5 years to go with the Oak Ridge Boys, and they were much hipper. They had long hair, and they wore cool clothes. And so I left J.D. Sumner to go play with the Oak Ridge Boys, and Elvis had just let the Imperials go off tour. So J.D. called me and said, he called me Tarzan. That was my nickname. He said, "Tarzan, you messed up. We got the Elvis tour. You could have been here." And so I went with the Oak Ridge Boys and with them for about 3 years. And then J.D. fired Donnie Sumner out of the Stamps. And Elvis worshiped J.D., but he loved Donnie's voice. So Elvis personally called Donnie and said, "Get a couple guys to sing with you and a piano player, and I'll hire you to play gospel songs around my house in Palm Springs, Beverly Hills, or Graceland, wherever I'm at." And so Donnie called me and said, "Hey, I just got fired. Elvis wants me to put a group together. You want to be the piano player?" And I said, "Yeah." Duh. And so I got that job, and our job was just to go to wherever he was at when he was off tour and just sit around the house. You know, we'd check in the hotel, and around 8 o'clock, someone would call and say, "He's up. Come over." And we'd go to his house, and he'd start singing Peace in the Valley or whatever, any old gospel song, which I knew every one of those. And my job was to run to the piano in the living room, and we'd sing for like an hour.
Would he sing with you?
Oh, yeah. He would say, "There'll be peace." And then he'd say, "Let's do it again. I'm going to sing baritone." So we'd do Peace in the Valley again. He'd say, "Let's do it again. I'm going to sing bass." And so it was that kind of thing. And then eventually, everybody that worked in the Elvis Presley Enterprises thought that Elvis was being very indulgent having paying us personally to do that. So they had Elvis put us on tour. So we would be in front of the comedian, because Elvis shows consisted of Jackie Kahane doing a 45-minute comedy set, the Sweet Inspirations doing a couple songs, and then Elvis would do the show. And so the comedian said, let them be in front of me because people are walking in when I'm doing my stuff. And so we had to do two songs in front of Jackie Kahane. And I was kind of embarrassed because we were doing pop songs. And Donnie Sumner was just a very gospel singer, you know, a lot of vibrato and stuff. And so I would go sit behind Glenn D. Harden, who played with the TCB band, and watch him do the show. And I was thinking, man, I could do this. And so then Glenn D., about a year and a half into the gig, said, hey, listen, man, I just did a record with Emmylou Harris. She's on Warner Brothers, and she wants to do a world tour for a year. So I can't do this gig and that one too, so I'm going to leave and go play with her. And so me being the hustler that I was, I said, man, put my name in the hat. I could do this show. And I got the show with no rehearsal.
So you got great stories about being on the road, working with Elvis, playing at his house, but you get into the record industry and the production end. Right?
Yes. Well, you know what happened was, so I go with Elvis, and I was with him till the end. We were at the airport on the 15th, preparing to go to Portland, Maine for the show on the 16th, waiting for the show plane to stop in Nashville and pick up the Nashville Cats. And he died, you know, before we could leave town. And so the guy that played with me with Elvis was named David Briggs, which I'll tell you about that in a minute. But after Elvis died, I was going, oh, man, what am I going to do? And I go back home, and I start working for David Briggs' publishing company. And Emmylou Harris called David Briggs and said, Glenn D. Harden just left me to go tour with John Denver for a year. You want to come do this tour? And David said, no, but Tony Brown would love to. She said, I've never heard of him. So I had to go out and actually audition for the gig. And then that led to being with Emmylou, like sliding doors. Yeah. With Emmylou, I met Rodney Crowell. I met Vince Gill, Roseanne Cash. And so when Emmy quit touring, I started touring with Rodney, and then with Roseanne when Rodney married Roseanne. And then eventually, I thought, I got to get a real job. So I come back to Nashville, and David Briggs got me a job with RCA Records as an A&R person. And that began my record career. It was
fascinating, you know, career. You end up...
I wasn't good enough to be a session player, because session players have to be... They can have to turn on a dime to be... Yeah. If you're a piano player, you got to be whoever they
want
you to be.
Well, you're going to do jazz one minute, you're going to do country the next.
Yeah, and I can't, and, I don't read, and, I don't read music,
so basically. You got to be able to read music upside down and all that good stuff.
Right,
right?
So, you know, in fact.
And show up on time. I'm not sure how good you were at that. I don't know.
No, I was very adequate, but the people I played for, I could do their stuff. They hired me specifically because I did a certain style of playing. And then I realized that I had risen to the level of my incompetence, the Peter principle, right? So
yeah, but not
I got
as,
a job in A&R, which is still creative.
I want to talk about that, because obviously in A&R, that's you're talking about signing artists, right? And that really finding artists, matching them up, and really scouting talent, and then developing the talent. You signed
right.
Patti Loveless. Talk about that story, because I think that's interesting to talk about how you signed and eventually had let go, let her move on. But tell me that story.
Well, at RCA, they wouldn't let me produce many things. So I eventually got hired to MCA by Jimmy Bowen, and he's guaranteed me to produce 3 records a year and to find new talent. And so I'm sitting in my office, and the front desk said, there was a guy had an appointment with me about his sister, Patti Loveless. And I said, no, he doesn't. And then he just forced his way into my office and played me a song called Sounds of Loneliness. And I signed her off that appointment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
and then, she was like a very distant cousin of Loretta Lynn. and she's so real. And she never became a superstar, but in the industry today, all the female artists like Miranda Lambert, Carrie Underwood, think of her as like a Patsy Cline. She was so authentic.
And she sold a lot of records. I mean, maybe not
a
superstar.
Oh, she did. We finally had a platinum album on her fourth album called Honky Tonk Angel. And then the option, you know, like the option comes up where after 5 years, it's the artist's option to stay or leave. And in this case, it was a record company's option to pick her up. We had to pick her up or let her go. And nobody at the label thought that she was very cool. They thought she was too backwoods for today's country. So her husband, Emory Gordy Jr., who produced the records with me, said, "Hey, man, nobody here really believes in Patty like you do. CBS wants to sign her. Why don't you let her go?" I said, "You know what? I'll go talk to Bruce Hinton, my boss." And I told Bruce that. He said, "Let her go." And then from that, she went to CBS, and that's when her career exploded.
It kind of took off. So some ways, I mean, you had to let her go to find her own voice in some
ways. Right. You know, and A&R, and I know the guy in L.A., Zach Horowitz, the president of MCA Worldwide, he was at CMA Awards sitting beside me when she won Album of the Year, Single of the Year, Female Vocalist of the Year on CBS. And he looked at me and said, "I'll never forgive you for letting her go." But, you know, I was thinking, I felt good about it because that would have never happened at MCA. And it's just part of enjoying helping people reach their appointed goals, you know.
But I
feel good about it. And to this day, Patty Loveless and Emory always let me know they really appreciate that.
Well, talk more about that, because you talked about her authenticity, and it's something that you stress in your book, and I wonder how you feel about the country music scene today.
Well, let's see. I'm not working at a record label, so I can actually
tell
the truth.
Nobody's listening.
You know, music goes through cycles, and right now we're going through this thing called bro country. You know, where every girl's butt is a sugar shaker and everybody's driving out to the country in a pickup truck listening to Hank Whalen and Cash, which means the pickup truck has to have Sirius XM because terrestrial radio is not playing that stuff.
Or an 8-track.
And then they throw a blanket in the back and have sex. And I was going, yeah, like you wouldn't get chiggers out in the middle of a big field.
You've been in the country.
I think I would take a girl to the Four Seasons and get the penthouse.
Well, that gives us a hint. Tony, I'm out of time, but I thank you so much for talking with us. Tony,
I really enjoyed it. And by the way, I am so honored to be from North Carolina. I was put into the North Carolina Musicians Hall of Fame about 5 years ago, and I'm just honored to have been from there. And I graduated in Durham. Southern High School.
Fantastic. Raised in the Triad, educated in Durham, and now belongs to the world. Tony Brown, music producer. His book is called Elvis, Straight to Jesus, An Iconic Producer's Journey with Legends of Rock and Roll, Country, and Gospel Music. And you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, award-winning journalist and essayist Hal Crowther's new book profiles freedom fighters and hellraisers. More on the State of Things after this.